This is for the unforgettable, the swift and sweet ones who hurdled history and opened a world of possible, the ones who survived America by any means necessary, and the ones who didn't.
Author Kwame Alexander doesn't talk down to kids. Instead, he finds new ways to engage them, often through poetry. His newest work, The Undefeated, is a picture book with illustrations by artist Kadir Nelson. And it features a poem that Kwame started writing over 10 years ago, which was inspired by the birth of his second daughter and the presidency of Barack Obama. Most of the book is an empowering look at the history of Black Americans.
The real reason we celebrate Black History Month is so that children in general, Black children in particular, can know that no matter what type of challenges they face in their lives, they can make it to the other side. That there's a lot of persistence and grit and this idea that Maya Angelou talked about. Though we may face defeat, we must never be defeated.
But The Undefeated doesn't shy away from the disturbing history of racism in the United States. There are pages devoted to the transatlantic slave trade and victims of police brutality.
I think as children's book authors, we have a responsibility to really help young people imagine a better world. And so the world may be kind of messed up. And I tell kids, and in particular my daughter all the time, yeah, the adults have kind of screwed it up, but it's up to you to sort of make it right. And where can you sort of get the tools to imagine what it looks like? And I think you get those tools between the pages of a book.
I asked Kwame how he approaches conversations on painful topics, both in his work and with his own children.
Some of those topics that are going to need to be discussed, like in The Undefeated, are going to be heavy, heady, emotionally heavy, weighty subjects. And I don't shy away from that. I feel like it's important to make sure that our children are aware because they're already asking the questions. Like, I decided as soon as my kid, who's 10 now, came home and had questions about slavery, that's when I start talking about it. Because who wants to really talk about it? It's tough. It's hard. It's tragic. And she came home at 9 and shared this story that happened in her class, in her fourth grade class, about slavery. And she had questions. And that was sort of my moment to say, okay, this is why we got to talk. This is when we got to speak about this with her. And so I think in the book, I just try to deal with some of these subjects because they're important, but I try to use poetry as a way to make it more palatable, to make it more digestible. I think poetry is that because it has so much white space, because it uses rhythm, because it's so few words, and it uses metaphors and figurative language, people can digest it.
We had a conversation recently here on the show about reparations. And one of the things that's come up here is once again, the sort of ahistorical lens through which we view American history and particularly Black history. And one of the people in the roundtable suggested that isn't just cheating Black Americans, it's also cheating white Americans from the full understanding of what happened in our past. When you write a book like this, are you also thinking about that? Does that come into play in terms of who your audience, who you're hoping will pick this up?
This book is a love letter to America. It's a love letter to Black America. Tanzina, I think books are mirrors and windows. And so a kid reads a book, they got to be able to see themselves. They got to be able to see their struggle. They got to be able to see their family, their community. At the same time, a book has to be a window. Kid reads a book, they got to be able to see kids who don't look like them, who don't come from their community, who don't necessarily go to church with them. Because the idea is if you want to create adults who are empathetic, connected, who are, you know, kind and thoughtful, who are not going to sort of immediately, you know, clutch their purse in an elevator or pull out a gun, you know, at a traffic stop, then you've got to make sure that as children, these human beings have books that encourage them to become more human. That's what I try to do. That's what I think most children's book authors ought to be doing, and many are doing, is to write books that are going to help young people become more human so that when they become adults, they are better than we were, than we are.
One of the things about the media industry writ large, which is no surprise, and that extends to the publishing industry, is to borrow the phrase, publishing so white. And I'm wondering, how was that process for you, trying to get this children's book published in an industry that's largely white?
So I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about that reality, because you're right. It's a real thing. I don't necessarily focus on what those limitations are. I spend a great deal of my time trying to make sure that I'm empowered, that I empower the people in my community, that I empower my friends and my family and my colleague and the children who are coming behind me. That's where my focus is. And so, yeah, there's a whole lot of conversation and discussion around, you know, diversity in publishing in particular, like you mentioned. And so my answer to that is, well, what am I going to do to ensure that there are opportunities for other writers like me? And so last year I created an imprint called Versify. And I talked to my publisher and we agreed to sort of partner on it. Publishing is like this dinner party. And there's 10 chairs at the table. And for so long, 7 chairs have been occupied. Every now and then, they'll let a guest come in and hang out and eat some of the food. But there's 3 chairs that are just empty. And so with Versify, what I want to do is I want to fill those chairs. I want to make sure I'm bringing more people to the table who have varied sort of ideas and ideals and different backgrounds and different stories to tell. Ultimately, I want to publish 10 great writers who can, you know, be at that dinner table. That's my goal.
Kadir Nelson, who illustrated the book, was metaphorically at that dinner table with you. You guys worked on this together. Tell me a little bit about that process, about Kadir's illustrations and how you all decided to make those choices.
That's a great question. The thing is, I didn't tell Kadir any of the people I wanted to use. I didn't give any indication of who these people were that I was talking about. When I said, "Black is the night is beautiful," I didn't tell him it was Langston. I didn't give him any names. And so all of the pictures, all of the dynamic illustrations you see in the book are straight from him. He made those decisions.
Well, let's talk a little bit about when you were growing up. Because I remember, you know, when I was growing up, it was rare that there were non-white characters, just period, in a lot of the books that we read, and particularly children's books. So when you were growing up, were there books that you felt really portrayed an image of Black Americans or being Black in the United States that resonated with you?
Absolutely. And again, I don't necessarily buy that notion that there weren't a lot of books that had Black characters. I think those books may not have been accessible. Like, I tell people all the time, there's this movement afloat called We Need Diverse Books, which is so important. And here's the thing. We need to embrace the diverse books that are already here. Like, that needs to be a part of that equation. We need more writers to have opportunities to get published. And we need to discover and uncover all those treasures that now exist, that have been around forever. So when I was growing up, my parents immersed me in writers like Lucille Clifton, Nikki Giovanni, John Steptoe, Ernest Gregg, Langston Hughes. The list goes on and on. And so I want to say that before I went to school, before I entered elementary school, with the exception of maybe Dr. Seuss, all of the writers I read were Black writers.
But granted, you do know you're the exception in that case. I grew up with Black and brown kids in a very low-income community, and I can tell you that the eyes started opening for many of us, you know, after maybe reading Native Son in junior high school. You know, like, it was a very slow process, and this was a Black and brown community. So you're the exception, I think, for a lot of folks. Maybe back then. Today, I don't know.
I got lucky. You're right. I had parents who were studying education and literature, you know, at Columbia. I got parents who were a part of the Black Arts Movement, who were taking me to poetry and jazz events as a 5-year-old. So I get it. You know, whereas for many Black people who came of age in terms of literature after Native Son, after their eyes were watching God, after Invisible Man, for me, it was, you know, at 3 years old, I was reading Everett Anderson's, you know, stories by Lucille Clifton and Stevie and Uptown by John Steptoe and Man-Child in the Promised Land at age 10. So I was exposed. So I get it. And so that's a great way to sort of bring it full circle, because what I'm trying to do is create literature, create an accessibility to literature for kids so they don't have to wait that long. Because, yeah, the books are out there that are going to help kids, you know, become more engaged, become more inspired, become more empowered. And through all of the different initiatives that I'm involved in, that's my goal, to get those books in their hands, all the books for all the kids.
Kwame Alexander is the author of The Undefeated and the founding editor of Versify. Thank you so much, Kwame.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. If you like what you hear, if you have tips for stories, or if you just want to connect with us, tweet us at The Takeaway or give us a call at 8778-MYTAKE.